welcome to Dion's Gaffer Tapes with me, Dion Dublin, the podcast series that gets the real stories from inside the dressing room, from the people pulling the strings, the gaffers. Every week we welcome a different gaffer into the studio, and this week I'm delighted to welcome a very tenacious midfield player who was a bit of a nightmare as a manager, I can vouch for that, Mr. Gordon Strachan, my old boss. How are you, sir?
If I felt any better, it'd be illegal. I'm absolutely buzzing, yeah. Life's good. I meant to pretend to everybody that life is really rubbishy at the moment, but it's been great for me. I've had practice of this before, hiding away for about 2 or 3 months, because once you get the sack, that's what you do. You hide away from the public. So I've had previous in these things, but other people are finding it hard. I've kind of slipped back into... I just said to Liz, have I had a sack recently?
It might be good. It might be just a football thing, because we're used to being out all the time. And when you're told to stay in, which is what we've always wanted to do for days and days, and, you know, spend time with the family, it's okay for us. We don't mind it. It's fine.
It's actually all right for most, because I've actually watched football people from afar, even my sons who are in the football world. Getting together again, reintroducing themselves to their families, and it's been great to watch them getting on with each other. And so it's been a strange time, but a special time for people as well, that they can reacquaint themselves with people they should have
and talk to each other and chat.
Absolutely, it's fantastic. It really has been good. I've been catching up with you know what I've been doing. I've been watching these old games. You know when you watch the old games that you've never seen before in World Cups and Cup finals? And I watch it and I think, geez, he played well. So I had to phone a few people up and apologise. So I said to Roy Aitken, the other day, I said, this is 34 years too late, but what a good game you had against Germany.
What about the interviews, boss? What about the interviews? You have to apologise to a few.
I've done that. I spent a lot of time apologising. That's a matter of fact. But to be fair, I've done it before the lockdown. I spent a lot of times writing letters to people. I think I've done it a few times at Coventry. A referee. I mean, I called a referee a clown.
Was it a clown?
He was the guy. Remember the referee trying to backheel the ball and missed it completely and fell on his face?
Yeah, I do.
Coventry, you know. That was in Coventry. So, apologising for another incident, and I had to apologise for somebody. I wrote a letter once when we held in for grim death at Liverpool one day, it went 2-1.
Yes.
So, I was a sub that day, player manager, and I was running up down the line, trying to organise the back four and pushes up and talk at the same time. And one of the coaches was screaming for Liverpool, he's cheating, he's coaching them. So I said, by the way, I'm not a very good coach. So don't you worry about it. So eventually I got on, and we were 1-0 down, and we scored two late goals, 1-2-1. But I fell out with a couple of coaches there. But I had to write them a letter and apologise just to say, listen, strange times. As a manager, you feel like you're a caged animal at times. Especially in relegation trouble.
Gaffer, did your personality change from a player to a manager? You know, when you were playing, were you the same? I've had you as a manager twice now.
Yeah.
And your standards are very, very high. Was it the same when you were playing?
Yeah. I spent a lot of time apologising there as well. Because I never kicked anybody in my life. I felt because I wasn't good at tackling, that I used to take all the kicks. And my retaliation to the kicks were a verbal joust with anybody. And some of the, as you say, sometimes some of the things you said on a football pitch were quite ridiculous. But we all change when we go on a football pitch. And I'm afraid the worst comes out of us. We're such good people. The football world has so many great people. But we change when we go into a football field or a football stadium, whether it be a manager, a player, a fan. We all change completely, and I'm sure we all get home with a fan, manager, coach, and think, what was that like today? Unfortunately, Mark, there was about 20 cameras on me at the time. But no, I never kicked anybody in my life, but verbally, I was a problem. But you had to stand up for yourself out there on the football pitch, you know. And I got that from Sir Alex as well. A bit. I was, I mean, to be fair, I was halfway down the road before I met him. He made me even worse. Because he used to say when Aberdeen used to play Celtic and Rangers, if they've got four players round the referee, I want five. You go, right, okay. When you see him kicking off, you're counting numbers, and you go, I better join in as well. You get across there and start shouting and screaming at the referee. And you get there, and Big Alan McLeish would say, what are we arguing about? I've no idea. What, join in, Casey has a go at us.
Where did you find the most pressure when you were playing? At what club? Where was the pressure on you to deliver the goods the most when you were playing?
It would have to probably be Leeds. Because when I joined other clubs, it was a case, you've known it yourself. You sign a contract and da-da. But nobody actually sits down, big man, you've got to do this, you've got to that. We have to win this, we have to do this. They usually just, there you are, sign this and let's see how it goes. Well, I went to Leeds and I left Manchester United. And it was the only club that said, listen, you're joining. The reason you're joining, you need to lead us out this division because we're in dire straits here. And if we don't get out, this club could be in. So for that pressure to go upon you and have to take that responsibility, which in a way helped me because I was losing my responsibility and I was losing my identity at Manchester United. And it was a bit my fault, or quite a lot of my fault. it was my feet. So, when I got there, I had this responsibility to kind of lead these guys back to that division. So that's probably, pressure-wise, that's probably been the most. There was obviously pressure games within my career that were hard, but for a whole campaign or two campaigns that you have to get up. So the expectation was a lot, but I seemed to enjoy it. And it gave me a new lease of life, that's for sure.
Was the pressure from the hierarchy, from the players around you? Did the players around you expect a lot of you because you came from Man United? Wow, we've got a Man United player.
I'm not so sure. I put all the pressure on myself. I put it on myself because I realised the pressure that the manager was under, the chairman was under, and the people who backed the club.
When was this, Gaffer? When was this, by the way? What year?
This would be, I joined them in end of March 1989. And we went on and got promoted after that. And I met some great characters with Cammy, Chris Kamara, Vinnie Jones, David Batty, Speed. So it was a great time, but it was a fantastic experience for me to be able to achieve something like that with these guys. Yeah.
Were they similar size football club back then to Leeds?
No. Man United were. They've always been, ever since the Busby Babes and the European Cup, this fantastic, fantastic outfit, as you know yourself. When I left them, I thought, and I got to Leeds and I thought, what have I done? Because leaving Man United, you know that yourself, leaving Man United, you think, everybody looks at you and goes, it's only downhill after that.
It is.
You went up the way, aren't you? You didn't. Most people can go away, but you were different. You still had to make a younger man had to make a livelihood for yourself and your family, and prove to yourself. I don't think you have to prove to anybody. I think it's proven to yourself. So I've never said this amount. I have to prove somebody wrong. Never. People ask questions of you, and then you've got to answer that question. You go, right, is he right? You know. Let's find out. So mine was different. My pressure, I moved at that time at 32. And my thoughts were, ooh, this is the end of my football career if I don't get this right. And yours was different. You left Manchester United, you're still a young man, and you had to kick on, which you did. And there's a lot of people leave Man United, and it's just too great a problem to leave Man United. And they kind of disappear into the ether.
I wonder why people have that mindset, and they don't have the mindset of, right, I have to do something for me now. Manchester United, fair enough, didn't work out, but I have to now kick on. A lot of players think, well, that's it really. I'm never going to make it at Man United. That's me done. And a lot of them just, like you've said, fall up. You never hear of them again.
Disappointment in many things, and as you watch that in football, disappointment can be too great for people. And then what happens with the disappointment being too great, whether it be an academy player getting released or somebody like yourself, and invariably find with people like that, when it's the disappointment, they start blaming other people. The coach didn't like me. This one didn't like me. Didn't they suit me? It was this. My mum, oh, Jesus, just get on with it and sort it out yourself. Now, the fact is sometimes you leave and you don't come back, it's because you're no good enough. But you've got to find out yourself if you're good enough or not. If people ask questions about you, whether me, for you it's, ah, well, he's no quicker, he's no good enough. Or maybe he's too old, he's had it. So you ask yourself that question, are these people right? Right, okay, let's have a bash. And then you find out, no, they weren't right. but sometimes they are right when you tell you you're useless and you can't get a cape anywhere.
While you were playing, Gaffer, were you picking up, were you taking on information while you were playing, knowing that you'd going into a coaching role or a managerial role?
When you're about 20 odds, you never think about that going on there. But I always loved football. I loved taking things in. Matter of fact, when I was a young man at Aberdeen, I was about 20, 22, so Alex used to pick me up and we'd go and watch Brechin versus Montrose, our both games, sit in the car and go to games because he knew I loved football. And we'd go to watch these games and I'd sit with him and as a 23-year-old, something like, he'd say, oh, this is happening and that's happening. He's doing that and he, you know what he's like. And I'd go, I didn't get that. No, I didn't, because I was too young for that. And then we get back in the car and he switches Bill Shankly tapes on. We had to listen to that all the way back to Aberdeen.
Was it intense, Gaffer, was it?
With him? No, at the time. No. There's a difference for me. I'm no obsessed with the game. I just love it. There's people are obsessed with it. And if they're not successful, they have these targets about, I want to be the manager of this club, I want to be that club. And if they don't get there, they get down on themselves. I've just floated about life going, I just love this game. Whether it's been coaching, management, you're not fine, well, that the priority is to enjoy every day. And we've had some hilarious laughs at Coventry with the guys we had there. I don't think I've had a training session without giggling at something or laughing at something. And that's just the way I am. And it's even when I'm doing these things, I cannot stop enjoying myself. Because it's such a wonderful lifestyle. So I was never obsessed with the game. I never had real ambitions. I just right, every day, let's have a go at this and see where we end up. And the funny thing about it is, if you don't make these big, lofty targets, it's amazing where you end up.
Yeah.
Manager of Celtic, Scotland, playing with Man United, and Coventry and Southampton. It's just wonderful. And World Cups, how did that happen? No idea. Can you analyse yourself? No, thank you. It's dangerous.
Do you think players that you played with and players that you were around knew that you were going to be a coach and a manager? Were you that kind of person? Were you telling people all the time where to go, what to do, how to do it?
I could do all that. And more so because I was captain of Dundee when I was 18. And I was officially useless. I mean, seriously useless. I've done it twice, and I'll probably come out later, to emulate two people. Emulate two people in my life. And I crashed and burned horrendously trying it. And one was Billy Bremner. And I wanted to be Billy Bremner at Dundee. And I could see the players looking at me going, shut up, you're no Billy Bremner. And I forgot to play football. Seriously, that was useless.
And why did you want to be like Billy, boss? Just the way he played, how good he was?
I just think everything about him, and I had that same physique as him as well, and I thought I was as hard as him. Nothing. So I defined it my own identity without trying to copy somebody, and eventually found my identity a couple of years later, and it certainly wasn't Billy Bremner. It got to such an obsession with Billy Bremner that I don't know if any of you guys can remember. Remember Cantona scored a hat-trick in a Charity Shield many years ago for Leeds against Man United. But the highlight of that game, if you ever go and watch it again, is my own goal. If anybody's ever watched it, if anybody's watched it, it's absolutely hilarious. Now, you've got to picture this, that it's Wembley. There's 100,000 people there. And I'm standing at the back post, covering the back post. Now, I've seen Billy Bremner doing this. Leeds versus Hibernian, I was a Hibs fan when I was a kid. The ball's flicked on, come to the back post. Billy Bremner's controlled it with his foot, beat somebody and started a move and Leeds counter-attack. So as the ball gets played, somebody at Liverpool heads it on, I'm the back post. Now, most people would think, clear it. My thought is, I can be Billy Bremner here. So the ball flies across to my feet and I go, right, how do I start a movie? and I misconsoled it, and it hits my feet 3 or 4 times before going in for an on goal.
You couldn't sort your feet out, I remember.
So I crashed again by being Billy Bremner.
Was he your hero as a player, boss?
No, I had a couple of heroes. One was a guy called Pat Stanton at Hibs, who I meet now and then, who was genuinely the best player that Hibs have ever had. I think he's ambassador there, Hibs' only ambassador. And I'll tell you why. There's two things. One, he was a fantastic player. Looked nothing like a Scotsman. He looked Italian. He was so good looking. My mother loved him. He had the tan. He had everything. Matter of fact, I questioned my sexuality when I was 12. Seriously, I was in serious thoughts about this fella. And he gets embarrassed now when I speak to him about it. So that, plus, here's one for you. For all footballers, he was the first person. I used to stand with a book at Easter Road with a pencil, and most players would walk by you. He stopped, asked me my name, signed it, and you go, bang, that's me. You know, not only is he a great footballer, but a great man. So that stays with you. But also had Jimmy Johnston and George Best and people like that when I was a kid. Because you never seen too much football on the telly. So it kind of had to be local, you know. I knew about Pelly, but I didn't know much about Pelly. But George Best, you used to see him on a Saturday night or something like that. Jimmy Johnston, yes. So they were my heroes. So it wasn't spread about all over the world.
So that transition, boss, from playing. How long was you playing career, Gaffer?
Oh, some people tell it was about 3 months. But officially, it was from about 15 to... I made my debut when I was 15 in reserve football and 16, first-team football. And I played till I was 40 with you guys.
Wow, of course you did, yes. Of course you did.
Yes, I was 40. You know, remember me? I was a wee guy at the right side of the field making you all their goals.
I can hear you right now. I can hear you. I can still hear you from the touchline. I can still hear you. Unbelievable times.
I loved every minute of it. I actually thought I'd finished at Leeds because I wasn't an influence anymore at Leeds. And that happened, in a crappy wee game, that happened at Liverpool, a 0-0 game against Liverpool, 44,000. But I just felt during the game that my influence was starting to wane as a footballer and as a kind of leader on the pitch. So on the Monday morning, Howard and myself just looked at each other over his office and went, need to call it a day, I think. Yeah. So I went there to coach the reserves, and I loved it. I spent 4 months, 5 months training the reserves and playing with them at Halifax, and the reserve games at Halifax. And it was a great time. It was a great time. And then I came to you guys, Coventry, after that. And I didn't want to play again, but within a couple of weeks, I was ended up playing again, and me and you played in a great game.
Yes.
At Spurs when we won 3-2. Matter of fact, it was a lucky ground for us.
Yes, it was a lucky ground. I enjoyed playing there.
Every now and then, I'd go in hibernation for a while, coach, then come out at the end of the season when I was needed. And the last one was probably when I was a player manager at Coventry.
I know why you came out, because it was the bonuses. Was there bonuses for the end of the season, Gaff? Is that what
Well, sometimes that made it interesting, yeah, but it was self-preservation, because I was promised a job after Ron had left, so I wanted to keep us in the Premier League. I didn't want to be playing the Championship again. But it was, again, that's a great experience, playing with some great players there, you know. I played with Sell and Huck and people like that, Kevin Richardson, Gary McAllister again, you know.
Roland Nielsen, boss.
Roland Nielsen. And Steve Agruzovic.
Yes.
I mean, seriously, what a good player he was.
What a good pro as well.
Great pro. So I had that, plus special days like staying up at Tottenham, the day we stayed up at Tottenham. We ended up going on to be a right good side.
Yeah, we did. It was frustrating that nothing happened. My question was, how did you find working with Big Ron? Because I remember as clear as day, There would be days when we would get in at the training ground for 9:15, 10 o'clock start, or whatever. You'd have been there an hour already. You'd have been there an hour. You'd have set out your session. You'd have put the cones out, and there'd be cones everywhere. There'd be bibs all ready to go. The balls would be there. Everything would be spot on. You'd have got the kids out to do everything for you, and then Ron came out and spoiled everything.
Listen, somebody's asking me what makes him tick the other day. It was great management, and he's seen things within a game or individual faults. But I think he grew into this giant celebrity, yes. You know. once your manager's on spitting image, you think, well, there's something wrong here, ain't you? You know, seriously. And he's playing a piano with rings and all that. In his own, what do you call it? He used to come on and sing, and you had to guess who he was, Frank Sinatra or something like that. And to be fair, I love life. But what I did, as you're right, I used to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning, putting things up, working about outnumbering teams in midfield or overlaps or things. I'll have that. I'd get my numbers right, da da da. And we'd go out for a warm up. Then he'd come down that, remember that bit of the road that comes to training ground there? With his mate Bobo, remember? Big
that's
heavy
right,
Bobo.
Yeah.
The two of them sitting in the front of the car. The back wheels were never used because the car was like 45 degree angle. and he just give me the thumbs up, and I go, all right. And then we'd do the warm-up. I'm just about to start using all that stuff you said. I've been out hours, making sure to the meter it was right, and it's perfect. We got the number 16. And he'd come out, and he'd be doing the hair, and he had his shorts rolled up. And he'd say to me, what are you doing today, Gordon? And I went, oh, well, we've got to do thing. Nah. He says, what we'll do is have a wee razz, an eight-a-side. So many people you go? I go, 16, so we're ready for the 8. I said, good. He said, get ready one, and I'll step in. He go, oh, no. So that was our training. And then you had to guess who he was that day. Remember, he always used to say, who am I? And he'd name people like Broadbent and things like that. He go, who's that? I'm David Ginola. He says to me one morning, he says, I've been out last night, I'm drinking that. I said, I feel rough. I feel my touch is gone. I've lost my pace. Can he see a pass? He said, I'll be David Rennie this morning. With a big set of
oh, dear me.
It was different. But I think the changeover in coaching styles was starting about then, because until there at that time, I was saying something like last night, it was everybody played 4-4-2. You just go on with it. And things started to change, and there was more thought put into it.
I think results changed as well. I think the dressing room changed because the gaffer had quite a relaxed dressing room. Then you take over, yeah. And it was very different. Because I remember Ron would quite brazenly put in the dress on a cold day. He'd put a bottle of rum, a bottle of brandy, a bottle of whiskey. Lads, if you want a nip before you go out, help yourself.
Yeah. I was talking about that last night, about how Man United, when he had the team. And you think about these names, you had McGrath, Murren, Whiteside, Robson, you know, Olsen. I mean, that was a heck of a team.
Some players.
But his mantra was Whiteside, McGrath. His mantra was, do what you want during the week and just play on a Saturday. But the game was changing. And I honestly believe if that Man United team had a bit more discipline, more height and strength, we would have won the league.
There were some players, wasn't there? Some players, some quality.
Oh, they were real classy players. But as you know, they were terrific lads as well. I mean, terrific lads. So, but I'd been brought up in Ferguson, Wilkinson mold. I know exactly what it meant to win games of football and what you had to do to win football. Ron won a couple of cups. That's great, and I think he was great for the game. Seriously, great for the game. But I think it was moving on now to you have to do something else to win things, leagues and fitness wise and all the rest. And I knew what it took to win games of football, and I knew what it took for football players to get to the top. And Howard was like that, and Alex were like that. It was all about winning. That's all that mattered.
Was there players that you managed and you thought, oh gosh, what a nightmare to manage and to look after and to get the best out of? That you know had it, you know they had it, but they just wouldn't listen to you.
You probably know the ones I'm going to talk about, but I could probably tell you in one hand the ones who you think, I'd rather not be in your company.
Yes.
Now that's no bad, under five or five.
That's
and
not
under.
Bad at all for the amount of time.
A period of 43 years, that's magnificent. And I keep saying to people, we are such lucky people to be in this wonderful, wonderful game where you can literally stay 16-year-old for the rest of your life.
or you can think you can, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, you think you can.
Yeah.
And by the way, I've got a lot of players meeting me now who'll come up to me and say, I'm sorry about my behaviour. I didn't realise what you were trying
to do. Have you really? That's interesting.
Absolutely.
That is interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Quite a few. And I'll go, I'm sorry about being a bit of a pain in the backside. Now I'm just realising what you and Gary or what other coaches were trying to help me with. And you go, not a problem.
Fair Fine. Enough. No mentioning no names. Were they in my dressing room?
Aye.
I'm looking at my fingers now thinking how many can I mention? Were there places where you thought you'd wished that you'd spent more time playing or managing, where you thought, oh.
The only time you'd be say, I would say, was Middlesbrough. But not because I just felt that it was simple at Middlesbrough. Because when I left there, the day I left there, and this is for a manager, just a bit of advice. When I left there, I was driving down and the LMA got in touch with me as I was driving. Gordon, can we help you with a compensation? And I went, no, you're all right. No, we can come across here and send. I went, no, I'm on the way. I'm leaving now. I'm in the car. I'm off. I'm going down the road. I'm going home. No, but you can't. I says, no. I says, I'll tell you what. I was fecking useless. So I'm not wanting anything. And I say that to Steve Gibson. He says, wait. I says, don't you worry about it. You've piped me off. I'm out of here. It's the only place where I felt I've never earned my wages.
Was that down to you not having a good time there, or the players not playing for you, the fans, or...?
Two things. After leaving Celtic, there becomes a problem. If you lose, I think Lenny had it when he went somewhere else. It's this win every day, and everybody has to have it. When I went to Middlesbrough, I just couldn't get the mentality of the players. Like, right, we'll just play, see what happens. And we get relegated. And we're still getting the same wages we got in the Premier League. So I found that hard. And what happened was, because I think most of my fight had been given to Celtic, because it takes up all your fight. You know, you've been there for, you know what it's like. I was there for 4 years. And I didn't have that, I'll take this group on thing, which I did all the way through my career. And it's not embarrassing. I mean, you've only got enough fight in your life to carry on. So that was a problem. So, and plus, I didn't do enough work with my recruitment. That's a huge thing in football.
Was that you or your staff boss, though?
That was me, really. Because I should have listened to the staff more. I actually thought I was in a place where no matter who I signed, could make them better and do this and do that. So I didn't do enough work on that. So that's why probably that's the only place where I feel like I've let anybody down, really.
I only had, I don't know, 8 months, 6 months with you at Celtic. But I've never had an experience like it in my life. Never. It was just incredible. The intensity of playing for that club.
Yeah.
At 37-year-old, by the way, you signed me.
That's right, yeah.
And the thing that took it... I was at Leicester at the time, or just finishing my time at Leicester, and I remember the phone call. You said to me, big man, come up the road for me. You're not going to start every game. Sit on the bench for me, because I need somebody that I can trust to play up front or at the back. And I thought to myself, thank you very much, that'll do it. When I got there, it was just above and beyond, boss, what I was expecting. Yeah. Crazy.
Well, you got there at a good time, really. That was a good run. And you ended up scoring the cup final.
I did. Crossed by Paul Telford, near post.
Right, well, to be fair, because imagine that when we're at Coventry. Hey, lads, guess what? In 10 years' time, we're going to beat Celtic scoring winners. And you go, are you sure? I'm the Celtic manager and you two are playing for Celtic. Come on, give me a beat. Because funny enough, Paul Telford, we played at AC Milan and Paul Telford played, and with a back four of, I think, Paul Telford, Gary Caldwell, Steve McManus and Dan O'Dea, which cost about 200 grand between them, playing against the AC Milan team of Inzaghi, Kaká, Seedorf, all these guys. And we drew 0-0 with them there. And we got beat in extra time. And next again, 2 days after, Gary Pendry said, you've got to be Paul Telford. He's wanting to retire now. So I went to the sauna. He's sitting there in the sauna. And he went, I said, what are you doing? He said, I've got to retire. I need to get back to the family. He says, here you go. He says, I bet you wouldn't think that I would be retiring after I just played against AC Milan, would you? It's just, probably not, Paul, but there you go. I'm finishing on that high note.
He's what a character. He was probably one of the most reliable. On the day of games, boss, he must have been one of those players.
Listen, it's like anything, in whatever business you're doing. You've got to, if you're picking a team, that's why I asked yourself to come up there. You've got to ask people who you can trust and have these people around about you. So as a manager or player, you stand at the tunnel and go, glad you're here with me tonight or the day. And that's the secret. It's like yourself, Roy Keane and yourself come up. And that was unbelievable education for the players. Roy kept himself to himself, but he mingled with the kids. You got on with everybody, brought everybody. And it was a case of showing, and that's the good thing about a manager, get people in who can set standards. That's why I took Paul to Southampton as well. I took him. He set standards in training, the way you behave. There's something wrong with him, like.
He's a bit of a psycho, yes.
You could trust them, you know.
On a match day, definitely.
Absolutely, on a match day, yeah. He played in the Champions League, and the ball comes shooting across at Old Trafford, along the six-yard box, and most people would boot it away with their left foot. And the ball's come to him, and he's, you know that Roger Spy thing where you do it outside your foot? And he's played it back to Boric, and Boric went, whoa. And then he's ran by me as the ball's got cleared, and he went, but you panicked there, didn't you? And I went, I hope you're right, I did. He says, trust me. Then he went off. But all he wanted to do was be a good teammate and that fella. So the thing about management, get good people around about you and they can do their job for you.
Yeah, so I was just about to say that, Gaffer, that you get the people that know how you work and want to work and they take that onto the training pitch for you?
Yeah, I've got that. But there's also another thing that you tend to forget, that I was doing something about the good players I've played with the other day there. And I kid you not, that the common denominator was, one was fitness technique, but the other one was being good people.
Yeah.
Good men. Humility. Good people. Good with other people. So that's why I used to bring people on, because they were good people. Not just because they could play football and run about. On top of that, you need to be a good person. And that's why I used to surround myself with good people, and that definitely helped. And you know the thing about this, and everybody talks about losing the dressing room. You know this thing is losing the dressing room. It's a nonsense. You can have arguments with everybody, but as long as they're all in the same way, and we can have it. Because I've argued with every one of you guys, and some of them are right good ones. You know. And then the problem with me is when I'm arguing with you, I think, well, hope they don't pick me up and smash me. You know, I had to have backup. I had to have backup around the boot me when this was kicking off. So I used to say to Gary Pendry, stay close to me. Stay close to me. I'm going in. So you can have arguments nowadays. If you have an argument, it's all over social media. It's had an argument. Ah, so what?
It's been videoed. The argument's been videoed.
So what? It's part of life.
The Noel Whelan situation, which we both know, he had so much more to give, so much more to achieve. And he knows it. I've seen him since, and he knows that he basically messed it up. He should have been playing for England time after time after time with his quality. But managing someone like him, and I've told this story many times about, you know, when Snowy went out and he injured himself, he hurt his Achilles. And then you kind of lost your rag and said, right, you're coming to live with me. Can you remember that, boss?
Yes, that was the first one where he kicked her. And the second one where I brought him, I'd been to Leeds for something. And I was driving down about 12 o'clock on a Sunday morning and the chairman phoned me. He says, listen, you better go across to Nottingham Hospital. Noel Whelan's in there. I said, what is it? I hope he's not hurt himself. He said he got involved in some sort of altercation. So I said to Gary Pendry, I'll meet you at Nottingham. So we both met up there and left Leslie in the car. So we went up there. And there he was, on the bed, handcuffed to the bed. He's still got the gear on he had the night before, but he's obviously taking a tanking somewhere for somebody or some guy. So I said, right, I've had enough of you. You're hemming me. So no, you're hemming me. And because the police said to me, listen, Gordon, if he gets in trouble again, he's in a real bad place. You see, I mean, he really is. So right, okay, bang. So I had to take him back to my house. I was like, a decent-sized house, but it's got renamed it the Noel Whelan Suite. But my wife loved him to death. And she couldn't see anything wrong with him because she's known him since a kid at Leeds, because she knew him as a kid at 16-year-old. And I said, he's a fucking pest. He says he's got this talent, he's wasting it. Oh, but he's always good in front of the kids.
Yeah.
So the kids told me years later that when he was at the table with me and Leslie, he was great. And my kids were 8, 12, 15 at the time. Or 8, I don't know. It was 13, 15, and 10. And they said to me, once you went to the door, he would start fecking this and fecking my fucking hair. And he's a... So, and he used to get up. And here's another one. He said to me one night, he says, can I... It was about the month. Because I said to him, you had to be in by 9 o'clock every night. He said to me one night, he says, Gaffer, can I go across to Telfs and watch a video? And I looked at him, I thought, I don't really trust you, but that's a month you've been behaving. So I said, on you go then. Right, okay, good. So he's went to the door about 20 minutes in, Leslie and the kids, said, do you fancy got the cinema tonight? I went, aye, good idea, let's go to the cinema, break it up. So we went there, we went in Leamington, you know, that wee place in Leamington.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went in there, and you know how the adverts are on, it kind of goes light and dark, light and dark. So I went in, but I've got the tickets, the kids are in front of me. I can hear Gemma and Craig giggling. And my wife looks at me, and she looks over at this bit. And there he is, there's Whelan, with some blonde-headed girl, right? But there's a chair next to them. But you can see the blonde-headed girl nudging him to look at me. But he turns half, just about 10 degrees and looks at me, then starts staring at the screen. So
panic setting.
He's panic setting. But there's an empty chair beside him. I say to Liz, you go and sit in our seats and I'm going to see him. So I'm making my way along the you know how you go, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, everybody go and sit down, sit up, excuse me. And he's looking along, he's getting white with fright. And I sit down beside him and the girl looks at me and I went, Telf, that's as good as I've seen you ever. Looking magnificent tonight. And he went, oh Gaffer, I was on my way to tell to I was at Waterbusters and I was picking up this video, right? And I met my friend here who was just on her own doing the same thing. I says, for Christ's sake.
Why didn't he just ask you if you could go to the cinema?
Well, I would tell you, but there's another twist to this story later on.
Okay.
That's why you couldn't tell me.
Yes, you and I, we know. We know. If you know, boss, you know. Simple as that.
Yeah, you know.
Do you remember, there's two things I remember clearly about yourself while we're managing. I remember one incident where you were absolutely raging, and I don't know what game it was. It was half time, and I think we'd been woeful yet again, and you were that angry that remember the bench that we had in the middle of the dressing room at Highfield Road, and there was a case of 24 bottles of water or something, and you were that angry, you smashed it with your right hand, and as you smashed it, it landed on your assistant manager's foot. But he wasn't allowed to make any noise.
You get these things, you think after, you thought that was funny, you know. I remember at Southampton, I had a team talk. You know when you're halfway through a team talk, you think, this has gone incredibly wrong. I had a board up and we're playing Tottenham. And I was really desperate to beat Tottenham. And I was going, listen, I've got a dream. And then I went, I've got a dream again. And I said to something, and I stopped myself talking. And I said, does anybody think I sound like Martin Luther King?
Oh, dear.
And the place rolled about laughing. And we beat Tottenham 5-1. I have a dream. And I could see Gary Pendry looking at me and going, packing the have a dream thing, you know. And I was wrong. I had to take myself, shut up, Gordon, you know.
That is unbelievable. Listen, I've kept you a long time and I didn't want to keep you this long, but I just wanted to ask you this question. As you've played for a long time, managed for a long time, if you were to have a dinner party with four managers, who would they be and why? Dead or alive, doesn't matter.
Dead or alive. That's not... I could have thought about that a bit more. Well, to be fair, I've had dinner with some of the best ones, Trapattoni and Sir Alex Ferguson and people like... Who would I...
If it was at your house and you could invite four managers...
Oh, no, they're not going to my house. I don't like anybody. I'd meet them somewhere.
Yes, fair enough.
We could do that dine with me thing. That'd be great with managers doing a dine with me thing. They make a meal or something like that. Wouldn't that be great?
And you go to them all the time. Nobody comes to yours.
Nah, just quite different places, but you don't come to mine. let me think. Who would I have? It'd have to be some sort of a character.
Surely Sir Alex would be there.
Okay, don't kick off. No, we're all right. We're fine now. We get together and text and all the rest of it stuff. As I said to you, I used to have Sir Alex over for bits and bobs as well. So that's a cracking... Klopp. I just love him. I've loved him since Mainz days because I knew all about him in Mainz. And this character, because I watched a documentary on him when I was Scotland manager in Germany, and it was in German. I never understood a word what was going on, but I loved him. So it'd be Klopp. I tell you who it is. Barry Fry. He just loves the game, and some of the stuff that he comes away with is hilarious.
He's funny.
So it'd be Klopp, Fry, and give me some other ones that you'd be thinking about that.
What about Pep or Venables or Clough or?
Yeah. I wouldn't have any good looking ones. That's why I've got the two.
Keep them out.
Clough.
It's just interesting to hear, you know, the kind of characters that you would like around your table. And what you'd want to get from these characters.
Basically. So it would be Clough at his best.
Yes.
And I think you know what I'm talking about, Clough at his best. Because I had an incident with him when I was a Leeds United player. I was a captain of Leeds, and this can only happen with Clough. Now, whether he meant this or not, that we were playing them, Leeds United versus Nottingham Forest. So Howard's doing his last talk. You know, I have that last talk just 10 minutes before you go out. And Howard's talking. Next minute, the door opens. And it was him. It was Clough, you know, with the green thing he used to wear, the rugby top, pair of shorts on, shoes. Anyway, Howard, I know that's a fantastic team meeting you're having there. And I know it'll be successful, but it's my birthday. And I want my picture taken with that young man there. And he's pointed at me. First of all, I'm about 34. And he comes across, and Howard went, oh, yeah. And he sits beside me, and he puts his arm around me. He's got a photographer with him.
Oh, my word.
He's taking the picture, and he's giving me a big kiss. And he went, have a great game. See you later. And he walked out the door. And I went, well, look to each other like that.
That's amazing.
I never kicked a ball during the game. I was still wondering what was going on there. I was still thinking, did I see that right?
What an absolute legend, the man.
And I went, brilliant, good, thank you, have a good day. I never kicked a ball.
Tell me that you've got that photo, Gaffer, surely.
I have not got it.
You've got to get that.
Listen, it still might be a dream. I'm not sure.
Listen, boss, I've taken up far too much of your time. There's so much more I wanted to ask you, but we're limited, and, you know, thanks so much for taking the time.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great time. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Big man, I'll speak to you later. Thank you.
That's about it for this episode of Dion's Gaffer Tapes. Huge thank you to my guest, Mr. Gordon Strachan.
Bye.
Don't forget, you can message me on my socials. And if you really like what you've heard, please make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Share with your friends. And if you really liked it, give it a 5-star rating. Thank you very much for listening. And I'll speak to you next time.
I'm going to leave now.